planet to live righteously.
Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's episode number 123 of the Cultural Hall. In the second and third block, we will be visiting with Tyler Glenn, who is the recently outed by himself Mormon. He's the lead singer of Neon Trees, who recently came out in a Rolling Stone article letting people know that he was gay. And we visit with him all about his mission when he served in Nebraska. Interesting fact about his mission. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but other rock stars served in his same mission. Also, we talk about his plans with the church now and kind of where that all fits together. That's the second and the third block here of the Cultural Hall. A couple things before we get the show started. Here in the first block, in just a minute, I'm going to share an interview that I did with a guy by the name of Ari Handel, who is a co-producer and co-writer of the film Noah that's out in theaters right now with Russell Crowe. So I talked to him a little bit about where their intent was in making that film and figured I would share that with you as well. So that's coming up still here in the first block. I wanted to share this email. This came from Andrea. It says, "Hey, Richie and friends, I really love the show. I enjoy the many different guests that are on and the topics that are covered. I'm writing in to let Brother Kyle, who's one of the hosts here on the Cultural Hall, know about a new way that he could get a date. I was driving the other day and I looked over to see a sign on someone's truck and it said, 'Would you date an older man with kids if interested?' And then it had the person's telephone number and then a little caption that said, 21 and older, please." Andrea continues on. She says, "I can't think of a better way for Brother Kyle to find his eternal companion. I'm sure you could get him a sign made for his car and possibly for his bike as well. So many possibilities," writes Andrea. She says, "I love the show. Thanks for letting me listen. Andrea." So thank you very much. Andrea went to theculturalhall.com. There's a contact us tab and you can send me a message there, or you can always just email me, richie@theculturalhall.com. You can reach out to us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/theculturalhall. We're on Twitter @theculturalhall. You can find us on Google Plus and you can reach out to us on Pinterest as well. Many ways to get in touch with us and many ways to enjoy the Cultural Hall here. So right now let's play that interview with Ari Handel. And then in the second and third block, we visit with Tyler Glenn, the lead singer of Neon Trees, here in the Cultural Hall. Hey, it's me, Richie T, and on the phone with me is Ari Handel. It is one of the writers of Noah and producers of, well, great films, The Wrestler and Black Swan. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You know, I have not, I admit to you and ask for your humble forgiveness and repentance. I've not had the opportunity to see, well, I've had the opportunity, but I have not taken the opportunity to see Noah yet.
Well, that's okay. I think this is the first time I've heard your show. So
okay. Well, good.
We're even.
Well, but here's the deal. I'm going to go watch Noah and then subsequently buy the movie. And so I hope that now this means that you will listen to my show every day.
Perfect.
Done. That's a deal.
Deal.
Now, I'm doing a little research on you, and what a fascinating story that you have from going from being a doctor and then deciding, you know, whether or not to do the whole science thing and science education to just being an out and out writer and communicator of science to help people get it. A pretty tough decision.
Yeah, you know, our life paths are never as straight as you kind of always imagine they're going to be when you're younger, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of wind their way and then you look back and you see that it makes more sense than maybe it did when you started. But I always loved science and I was always fascinated by the human mind and the human brain. It just turned out not to be, the day by day of that turned out not to be the right thing for me. So I've been able to explore more things this way and learn about more things than I could. When you're a scientist, it's very myopic and you really dive very, very deeply into one or two questions for decades. So this is a little easier. I just dive somewhat deeply into something for 5 years. I can handle it a little bit better.
So the other part of it, too, that's interesting to me is I don't often hear science and Bible stories seem to be something that combine itself.
Yeah, I think that might be a little unusual, but look, both of them involve asking questions and finding answers, and both of them involve trying to understand the world around us and where we came from and who we are. So they're not unrelated in terms of what they're trying to get get at.
Mm-hmm. And they come together kind of in that frame. You've been working on NOAA since 2003. That's a hefty process.
Yeah, I mean, that was interrupted by doing some other things. We made some other films in there, but this we've been with this for a long time. But it's I think it's the kind of story that, you know, some people have spent their life thinking about some of these stories from Genesis. So I think it rewards going deep and thinking about it in detail and over a long time and really mulling over some of the questions that are there.
How do you feel about the response from religious folk in response to Noah? I know I've read everything to what a great depiction to I can't believe, you know, that they would even deign to take on something like that.
Well, I guess it's been interesting to see such a spread of opinions from, like you said, from some people saying this is the least respectful thing I've ever seen to people saying this is, you know, one of the most respectful and thoughtful things I've ever seen. So I guess I'm not sure what that means. I guess that means more about who the individual is and where they're coming from than maybe where we're coming from. But I guess it also means that there's room for a lot of opinions and get a lot of people to think, and that's great. If there's a dialogue about it and people are talking and having a discourse, then I'm happy. And I think that's true in the religious side of things and from the non-religious side of things, where we're also getting, you know, many people who have extremely positive reactions and other people who don't. And again, as long as we're in dialogue and people are talking about the movie and talking about the ideas and talking about the Noah story and kind of some of the things that we have to say about it, then I'm happy.
Aside from the business portion of making movies, was there a hope of enlightening people to this story of Noah and to this great biblical story?
I think there was a hope. I mean, it's a great story. So the biggest hope was to tell the story. Mm-hmm. And to grapple with the questions that are there, because they're fascinating questions and they're universal ones. So if there was any hope in that regard, I guess I'd just say that, you know, and here I'm talking about the secular side of the world. There's a lot of people who feel like, oh, that's Sunday school. That's not for me. I'm not religious, so there's nothing for me there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there was hope to sort of say, you know, these are powerful stories for a reason. And the reason that they're powerful is not just for people who happen to be believers in any particular deity or any particular code or any particular religion. They're powerful because they're great stories that can also function on the level of myth and mean something to everybody, whatever you believe, because they're universal, they're about the human condition. So if we did that and get people to say, oh, wow, we can re-engage in these things, in these stories, we don't have to cut ourselves off from them, because they're not trying to preach at us.
Mm-hmm.
They're just trying to entertain us and make us think. That's a great thing that we could have done.
Well, I'm looking forward to being both entertained and thinking. And I'm glad to have you listening to the show all the time now. And as part
longer
of our,
every day.
Yeah, as part of our deal. The last thing I just wanted to ask you about, Darren Aronofsky as your roommate, how was that?
Good. He wasn't actually my roommate. He was my suite mate.
Difference? Help me out here.
We were in neighboring rooms. We were part of a rooming group, but I did not actually have to sleep in a bunk bed with him.
Oh, that's probably better that way, I would imagine.
Yeah, so there's still some mystery.
I love it. It's Ari Handel, one of the co-writers and producers of the film Noah. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
All right, it's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. And this is really cool because now you make, Tyler, the three of the four neon.
Why haven't you ever had us all on together as one?
It's hard to get all
as
you guys.
An entity.
It's hard to get you all in a room.
It's true.
But
it's difficult.
It's a lot of drama. I mean, where some of you guys don't even speak to each other, that becomes difficult. And it's like, oh, well, we have to have so many of the right color M&Ms to get.
We each claimed a corner of Utah Valley. So like we, and there's like a, you know, a radius clause.
Yeah. Like the old Brady Bunch episode. You have the masking tape. Right. You're not allowed to cross this line.
Right.
Tyler Glenn from Neon Trees. Thanks so much for coming here. And
You're welcome.
Doing this in person.
Here I am.
I love having you here. This is cool.
Do you usually not do them in person?
When I talked with both Brandon and Elaine, we just did it over the phone.
See, who's the diva now?
Yeah.
In the group.
Who cares? Nobody cares like Tyler does.
Mm.
You know, a lot of big news with the big Rolling Stone article that came out.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Sure.
But I want to talk about upbringing. Tell me about, are you a lifer, member of the church?
Yeah. My parents, my dad... he converted when he was 18, went on a mission, met my mom on his mission, baptized. Well, no, it wasn't like that. It always sounds like that.
Yeah, no matter what you do.
I know.
You can't ever be, make it sound like it wasn't some sort of...
Yeah, he met her and her brother and baptized them.
Oh, cool.
And then they remained in contact, and she wasn't interested at all. And either of them, you know, weren't interested romantically until after, but they just became good friends through letters and... he actually proposed in front of BYU when they were both in Utah on their first date.
He proposed on their first date?
Yeah, she said yes.
Really?
They've been married for, I think, almost 40 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's an awesome story.
It doesn't always happen that way.
No.
But...
Or it does happen that way, and then it also ends just as quickly,
right,
too, where it's like,
right.
No, yeah, he
great.
Proposed. But and you're a Southern California Mormon.
Yes.
So,
born and raised
until when?
21. So post mission.
And, I think that it's interesting, you know, when we had Elaine in, we talked all about her band before she went on a mission and how she just kind of stopped everything she was doing and said, you know what? I'm kind of being a hypocrite. I want to go do this church thing. I'm telling people that's what I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And then went and did it. What was the process like for you leading up to a mission?
I was more outlandish than I am now as a teenager. I was, you know, there were times where I wasn't allowed to pass the sacrament just because my hair was too crazy and it would be a distraction.
But really?
And the trouble was, like, I knew friends of mine over the weekend were doing things, you know, morally that would keep them from doing that. So that sort of created this shift where I was kind of angry for a while. Not at the church, but just probably more at my bishop.
Right. I mean, that kind of thing happens a lot where it's like, yeah, okay.
And they were isolated incidents. I'm not saying like it was like every Sunday, but.
But you look around your congregation, you go, I know where that guy was at last night, and he is the first counselor in the bishopric. I'm pretty sure that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a frustrating thing.
Yeah. But so, I mean, that just paints the picture of like, I was definitely a questioner, and I definitely was like, rebellious, but at the same time, always had sort of a reverence for the church. But I really didn't come to a conclusion that I wanted to go on a mission until the summer after high school. I was listening to a lot of Bruce Springsteen, which is very spiritual for me and
really?
Church-like. You know, working a fast food job, and just I didn't hang out with a lot of people, and I just read the Book of Mormon and. You know, that was my turning point. So for me, it was a very personal decision. My parents were actually just as surprised, you know, that I was even going, because it was never like, I guess it was something they wanted, but it was never like an expectation, I guess.
Your parents played the role of, you know, if he wants to go, he'll decide to go.
They would have those like those dutiful breakfast table sit downs where they would be like, you know, we hope this is something you'd at least entertain or. You know, and I always had respect for my father being a convert and going, and then obviously meeting my mom. So
did he have a lot of stories besides the meeting of your mom that he would share with you from?
Oh
his
yeah,
mission?
Yeah, countless. And so it was cool because he always looked back on, you know, those 2 years as like, and it's always cliche because everyone kind of talks about their mission and over and over again. It always goes back to that, but he would do that and. I liked hearing the stories. I was never afraid of being a missionary, but it was like, I don't want to go out there. I was a logical person. I was like, I don't want to go out there if I don't believe it, I guess.
It's an interesting thing, and it alludes obviously to the Rolling Stone article where recently You've now just made it known to the world that you're gay.
Yeah.
At this point, contemplating a mission, is that something that you had become kind of aware of your own homosexuality, or were you still?
Yeah,
just
I mean,
like,
I've known. I dramatically say three, but I probably have known since I was six that I had crushes on boys in class and things like that. But I think I was never told that it was wrong until the kids at school made it clear that that's not what you want to be. And so that's when it was in my consciousness, like, okay, I probably should keep this buried.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're a young kid, you don't really know about sex anyway. So it's not like,
yeah, it's not like 8-year-olds are going sex.
Yeah. It was not, you know, so, you know, I just liked girls and that was what I did. But, it's just always something in the back of my mind. I had never acted on it till after my mission. So it was never a huge conflict going on a mission, you know,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, even on the mission, like, you know, I think, you know, you get in this routine and yeah. And I think being around, you know, you're a bunch of guys on a mission too. It's like you end up just feeling like emotional attachment. So I would find those like emotional attachments with guys and I'd be like, wait, this feels definitely like deeper than just like a friendship, you know? So it was definitely something in my mind that I continually had to kind of think about.
Well, and certainly I'm sure that you weren't the only person on your mission.
It
was
funny
because
I actually had plenty of elders talk to me as when I was their leader, whether it's a district or zone leader, talk to me about these things. And yet I never divulged back really. So it was interesting. I definitely knew it wasn't, I wasn't alone, you know, mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't know if I was ready to face that. And I think a lot of it had to do with, I never really had acted on it to know. So it was just something kind of like, that's something I'm not going to entertain.
Being from California and then also about the time frame, you know, we're starting to lead into things like Prop 8 and some of that kind of stuff. So then, you know, you come back from your mission, you've served the church for a couple of years. Family's still in California?
Yeah. And I lived there for about a year after my mission before I moved up here.
So really big focus on the definition of marriage and everything like that. The church playing a huge role in the making sure that didn't get approved. Where do you fall in with all that? Because I know for a lot of people, it was pretty difficult.
That was kind of a turning point. And it wasn't, I don't want to say turning point, like all of a sudden I didn't agree with the church, but it definitely was a weird point for me because, you know, my family was being asked to have things in their lawn, declaring, you know, was it vote yes on Prop 8 or vote no? I forget.
I think it was, it's counter to whatever we think it should be.
Right.
It was like no on Prop 8 meant you didn't want, I don't know. People know what we're talking about.
Yeah. So advertising that marriage is between a man and a woman. And for me, like not being sure if I, you know, if I was ever going to come out, if it was ever necessary, I wasn't like actively championing my parents or that's the wrong word, but actively against my parents' mindset. But at the same time, I didn't agree with it because I had a lot of gay friends. I had a lot of thoughts on the issue that I never thought it was completely wrong. I don't think my parents necessarily did either. I just think it was something that they kind of definitely like were told.
Yeah. It seems like for a lot of people, the Prop 8 thing in California was they really hadn't thought it through, but the church said, you know, from the pulpit, hey, we need volunteers. We need money and this is what we're doing. And people just kind of went into it. And then since there's been, not, I wouldn't say backlash, but some people that have gone, man, I wish I could take back what I did. And the church has changed quite a bit since the time of Prop 8 too.
Yeah, and I think that's part of my excitement for even getting to do a story on coming out at all, because I got to really share, you know, my opinions, and it wasn't just like a tweet that I made and people just assuming, oh, okay, now he doesn't like Mormonism. Because as far as like the greater world fan base of Neon Trees, like I don't think they always associate me being Mormon.
No, I don't.
Because I don't really talk about it that often. But to a lot of my friends and a lot of our local fan base where we started, and a lot of people around, like they know I am. So I know it was going to be a question. But also, I just didn't want people assuming that I had ill will towards the church just because I was deciding to, you know, be gay. Or not deciding to be gay, but just deciding to announce I was.
I decided to be gay. Oh, well, I'm deciding to be straight right now.
Yeah.
On the mission, you went to Nebraska.
Yeah.
How was that? You're opening the call, you're maybe hesitant to go, and then it's like Nebraska.
Like I said, I was listening to a lot of Bruce Springsteen, and the only thing I knew about Nebraska was that there was a record called Nebraska by Bruce Springsteen. So I didn't know much about it at all. And I used to think Omaha was short for Oklahoma. So I honestly, I really didn't know much. And the only other thing I knew was that there are more cows than people, because I was vegan, and I am. And being a vegan in Nebraska on a Mormon mission also posed conflicts of its own, you know?
Yeah, that seems to me like that would be like, oh, great, here's special diet missionary.
Yeah, and I hated being that guy, and I totally was. But I didn't, I made it a point that I wasn't out there on a mission preaching veganism, you know, so I didn't, and I've never been a preachy about it anyway, it was just a choice. So a lot of the times I would just write, Elder Glenn is lactose intolerant on the calendar, and most people were cool.
Are you vegan because of the environmental, the health, or?
No, I mean, to a degree, but not necessarily. It started just from health and like wanting to be, I was tired of being a chunky teenager.
Were you a chunky teenager?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a hard time, for people who don't know what Tyler looks like, he is just skinny, and and I'm envious because you get to dress the way that I wish I could dress, but because I'm a bigger person, it just, like, the skinny jeans and stuff like that don't look good on a fat person. So I'm just jealous.
That's say anything because I don't want anyone to take it the wrong way, but...
You know, it's an interesting topic with veganism and the word of wisdom, obviously, too.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, I'm not going to get preachy, but it's interesting that people will really focus on the...
You can get a little preachy here. We talk about this all the time.
It's the coffee and the alcohol and the drugs, which obviously are big no-nos, and obviously cause, you know, terrible things with health and with life in general, if you abuse them. But there's also like that, there is also, you know, mention of not eating meat excessively and keeping healthy. And I think in the Mormon culture, it's always a thing. It's funny that like soda restaurants exist in Utah County, like specifically to go get soda and cookies, and that's it. Like, it's not a bar to go get a cocktail.
It is for us.
Exactly. And so it's interesting. The dynamic, I don't know.
Yeah. I like it because we always say the word of wisdom is a list of don'ts. Don't pay attention to the do's, you know, the treat yourself healthy and the, you know, abstain from eating too much meat and stuff like that. No. Don't pay attention to that stuff.
I think the other day me and Elaine were talking about Break the Fast, and how I remember the singles ward days of Break the Fast, and it was just like eating like, you know, Bisquick and cheese and bacon and by the like casserole dish full.
Yeah.
After you like had the spiritual fast, when really the whole time you were feasting for a piece of gum and wishing you could take a drink of water and really not thinking about the reasons why you were doing it. Yeah. And I'm guilty of that as well, but it was kind of it's this funny thing in the culture.
Just such a weird dynamic, dynamic isn't the word we want to use.
No, I keep saying the wrong words, but...
Just this, oh yeah, spiritual, oh yeah, you bet, I'm so close. I cannot wait till I get to go with all my friends and eat way too much food if we, you know, gave this to people that were homeless.
There's always breakfast for dinner. I don't know if that, how it was for you guys, but...
Well, that's Utah County, because you got your waffles and your pancake parties and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I want to come back here in the third block of the Cultural Hall, and I want to talk about you now, today.
Yeah.
And get into more of the band and kind of what future is for you as well. That'll come back here in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5576 to book your shoot today.
It's time now for the third block of the Cultural Hall. It's Tyler Glenn, the lead singer of Neon Trees. And all right, so you get back from your mission, and then walk me through all this. At this point, you've been serving, you did the whole time in Nebraska, yeah. Right? Pretty successful?
Honorably.
Pretty successful?
Yeah, I recall 17 or so baptisms. It's not a point thing, but yeah, I had a great, dude, it's, other than like, if I hadn't been in the band, I would still revere the 2 years as my favorite 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, like it really, and I still talk about it.
Are you in touch with any of the families from Nebraska?
I am. It's really cool. And it's cool when I came out, getting these really loving letters from people. And that was in the back of my mind. I wasn't seeking approval, but it was kind of like, you know, I wonder if this is going to change the friendship that I have with these people.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't. It's been really cool. It's really nice.
I would think it would be such an interesting experience, too, because so much of that probably, you know, not personality, but that portion of your life as you're serving a mission, you just kind of leave out because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're there to serve people and to teach them the gospel. So it's not like, you know, I'm a great musician and get ready for me when I get back.
No, I made a point. I would write neon trees on all the apartment walls. So
really?
They're still there. It's funny because Dan Reynolds from Imagine Dragons served in the same mission 2 years after me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he got really tired of hearing tales of Elder Glenn and seeing the name.
Really?
We've always kind of butted heads a little bit. Not in a dramatic way, but I think it's always been this sort of like,
that's
rub.
You know, it's so funny to me the way that, and we joke around about it as far as Mormon culture goes, how it's the 6 degrees of Mormonism,
mm-hmm.
but it really is so tight knit as far as that goes.
Oh, it is.
I mean, cause, like you share that about Dan Reynolds from Imagine Dragons, lead singer, who's Mormon, and then he and
Brandon Flowers?
Brandon Urie from Panic at the Disco.
Yes.
Raised Mormon.
Yeah.
They were in the same stake out in Las Vegas.
That's funny.
And so it's just like this small, everyone, yeah, oh, sure, he served here with me after this. Or,
right,
you know,
right,
we
right.
used to go to Boy Scout camp together or something like that.
Right. No, it is funny.
Maybe a future priesthood off or something like that between you and Dan. I don't know. That may not be a thing, a priesthood off. I bet the church would probably discourage
that. What would happen
that.
With a priesthood off?
Well, you have a sacrament passing competition. You know, you arrange kids in the row because kids are always the one that take the most time.
Right on.
So if you can coordinate getting it through the kids quicker, there's that fast offerings, you know, door to door.
Right,
so there's an athletic.
I like it.
blessings. I'm not sure. I'll write it out. We'll figure it out.
All right.
Priesthood off between you and Dan Reynolds.
That'd be a good viral campaign, viral video.
go in larger scale there just because of that comment. Isn't it kind of cool how, I mean, maybe you don't look at yourself as part of this, but maybe you do, how it seems like music is just being taken over by these really great Mormon folk.
It's cool. It is. And that's, you know, that's what I... you know, I think it's fantastic. I like that obviously Brandon Flowers from The Killers and Dan and myself, and I think there's a it's been a nice dialogue to talk about it because we are these successful bands, all on different levels, and yet we've maintained some sort of reverence for the church. I don't know personally where everyone's at, but I like it. I really think it's cool because it shows a normalcy, you know, that I think people still have a hard time digesting because they still think of the big love.
Yeah, your polygamy or your horns or your, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The Neon Trees pretty consciously made the decision to have not necessarily a Mormon-centric, but a really sort of reverence and kind of Christian aspect to it. You guys aren't a Christian band.
No.
But certainly there, I've heard stories of like pre-show devotionals and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's our life. It's the way we were raised. And, you know, currently we're all at different stages, but it's still something that's, you know, completely in the fabric of who we are. So I, we do, we pray, we reflect a lot before shows. We definitely have the dry tour rule where we keep that, you know, and we keep it over our entire crew who aren't Mormon, you know, that not to be oppressive or be like lifestyle police, but, it's something we want to keep because we do recognize the chaos it can bring. And we've all had our experiences with, you know, dabbling in breaking the word of wisdom and things like that. So, I mean, we know from experience that like it's something we want to keep within the band because it helps the business, it helps the band operate,
and it's part of the image too. I think people,
it's cool. Yeah, I think that's something that was kind of interesting me coming out. It's kind of against, it's the kind of a strike against the image, and then we have this song called Sleeping with a Friend, and it's kind of a strike against the image, but it's, to me, it isn't, because I think it's me being open and honest. And also, I feel like the song lends itself to maybe be lewder than it actually is. It's really just an honest dialogue of the dangers of having that sexual relationship with someone. So, in a way, it's still a very Mormon sex song, in a way.
Every Mormon boy and girl over the age of 21 has had a sleepover, guaranteed. Yep. Oh no, we didn't just accidentally fall asleep. It's a planned, you know, we're going to behave ourselves, but we'll have that sleepover. Yeah. Oops.
Yeah.
So you get to the point where, I mean, you know, that you need to be honest with yourself and with others. How did you arrive at that point? And then who did you tell first?
I mean, I wasn't the last to know that I was gay. Like I've known that obviously for a long, 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 long time, but I think being in the band, it got to the point where I was like, maybe I don't ever have to come out. I can kind of hide in the artistic musician world where it's fine.
And he's eccentric.
Yeah. Which a lot of people already knew that about me, you know, but I think it came talking to a therapist and something that I was just kind of afraid of. And I didn't think highly of therapy and psychology, I guess, but it really helped me talk openly into a non-judgmental source, you know, so that really helped me just like talk about things about my childhood and things about, you know, my teenage years and things that were on my mind currently. And
what were you afraid of? You said that maybe you were afraid of something. What were you afraid of about it?
Oh, I mean, I think you're afraid to face your demons head on sometimes. I mean, I know I was, and I know it's a scary thing to progress, I guess, you know, it really is. 'Cause it takes a lot of work to really progress, when you're consciously wanting to do it. And for me, I wanted to have a breakthrough, and I didn't know what I was breaking through, but I wanted to have that. And, that helped me, you know? And I think it was like, I'm 30. It's a cliche milestone year, for me. I don't drive, so maybe I should get a license, you know, maybe I should...
Wait, you don't have a driver's license?
No, never had one.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I always used the thing that, like, I'm gonna be a rock star, and I won't need to drive.
Really?
Yeah, so like a 16-year-old, that was my response.
Okay.
Very tool-y of me, but that's what that's how I would respond. But yeah, so I never had that, and I was like, maybe I'll just get a license, and then I don't know. I think it's just something in me, like wanting to just. I started being really, really just like light and happy and okay with people finding out about my flaws, you know, even just the light stuff, you know, and it was cool. And it got to the point where I was like, this shouldn't matter. Hopefully it doesn't. I'm going to try it out. And I started writing the record, and a lot of the songs were about my, you know, conflict with my identity and things like that. And mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to do another record where I'm talking about it in interviews and not being able to openly talk about some of the songs, you know, I don't want to do a disservice to the music. So it just got to the point where I was like, I'm going to talk about it. And, I talked to my producer, Tim, who's one of my closest friends, not Mormon. And, he gave the coolest response, and it was basically, Tyler, I love you and I'm so happy for you. And I never, ever associated happy or love or anything good with being gay. It was always like something I had to either hide, be embarrassed about, be scared that I was going to be called a slur walking down the street. And so the minute I heard that from someone that I really love and respect, everything flipped. And it was like, oh, I want to tell the person next to me on the plane.
Yeah.
I want to tell, you know, which I'm glad it didn't, because it's not necessary, but it's at that point where you're bottling up these feelings. And, you know, so I started telling the band, and I told my management, and then I told my mom, and then my mom wanted me to tell my dad, and it kind of went on. And
so you told mom before dad?
I told mom, yeah. I don't want to say we're closer. We are. I mean, we're...
Well, it's a different relationship. The relationship I have with my mom is different from the one with my
totally.
Dad.
Totally. And I think I kind of thought that she knew, because mm-hmm. she loves me and knows me so well. And
we always had a thought that it
she
wasn't
didn't.
That
No,
really.
She was like... You're joking, blah, blah, blah. Like, because I'm kind of the class clown in the family. I don't know, for lack of a better word, I'm kind of the prankster. So I think they definitely thought I was kidding. And which was really nice and sweet that, A, they didn't ever think about my sexuality. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I mean, if anyone's business, it's not anyone's business, but I mean, I'm sure your parents, when you're 30 and not dating anyone, they think, okay, what's going on? What's the thing? But it's cool. It was very sweet that they didn't care, that they didn't look at me in a certain way, you know?
So mom and dad still pretty strong in the church?
Very, yeah. And that was the thing. And it was probably the one thing I got really emotional about. I was like, I do not want this to change your relationship with the church, you know? Mm-hmm. If it does organically, or if that's, you know, your truth, then like, fine. But like, I do not want you to do it out of love for me and like, you know,
mm-hmm. did you rehearse talking to dad? Like in my mind, did you really?
Yeah.
Practicing it before you went to talk to dad?
And then doing it on the speakerphone. I filmed
it. No way.
Cause I wanted if on the off chance that he did flip out, I wanted to show him later, but he didn't flip out. He was curious, you know?
Well, I think
he didn't get it.
I think for a lot of people within the church, I mean, it seems like we always joke around about being a couple steps behind,
sure.
but I think that unless you know someone who's been gay or who is gay, I don't think that you really think about it too much. I think you just
no.
kind of go,
which
oh,
is
okay,
actually
this is what
should
they say.
Be the way you kind of live. I mean, no one should really overthink anyone's sexuality, but at the same time, you know, there are issues that people do need to think about and be educated on. But yeah, my dad just never thought about it. And he definitely had the, like, I don't get how someone would come to the terms or come to the conclusion that they're gay, you know, and that obviously that's not something I concluded.
Sure.
Maybe when I was young, I concluded, okay, I have these feelings, but it was never something like I decided upon. Because honestly, I don't think I would decide a path of that had so much ups and downs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know you hear that a lot, but I really wouldn't choose that lifestyle.
Well, and as a heterosexual person, I don't think of, you know, it was a cold day in March when I decided I was going to love women. I mean, that was never something that I was...
Well, it's not to say that some people don't have questions and curiosity about their sexuality when they're going through that, and maybe do have that curiosity, but and then they come to the conclusion. But really, I think you are. You're born with the way you feel. And that was the thing that Elaine reminded me, which was really cool, because she's definitely, and we're all DS, but she's definitely very letter of the law, and very, she's made it a point to really make her life very strict, which is great. And I respect that about her. And I was very curious how she would, you know, I knew she would love me, but her immediate questions were like, so, well, how do you feel about the church? Mm-hmm. That's what she wanted to know. She wanted to know, like, all right, well, now that you can't go to the temple, are you going to start drinking? Like, very flat out.
Really?
Things like that. And I was like,
wow, good. I mean,
which is cool.
Yeah, get right to the point,
which I've always appreciated about her, you know? And so, you know, and it was an interesting dialogue. And those were things that I was like, that's not ever been me. So I'm not going to all of a sudden start that. B, like, you know, I just am figuring this all out, you know? You know, and I think there is a way to be gay and also actively Mormon. And I think a lot of people are proving that. If, you know, if that's the path I decide to go down, I don't know. Like, I definitely don't know how I fight, you know, those natural attractions that I have. And and part of me coming out is definitely like me, like coming to terms of like, I don't want to continue to fight that feeling, but I'm also not going to become I'm not going to lose my moral compass, I guess.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that doesn't sound preachy, but it's just...
No, I don't think it does at all. And there's a lot of people who I think are in your similar situation. I know there seem to be two responses when the whole thing broke with the Rolling Stone article. Mm. One was, yeah, who's surprised?
Sure.
And then two was, you know, way to go to Tyler for being, you know, honest, telling everyone how he is. And then I found particularly interesting that it seems like a point was made to continue to associate yourself with Mormonism within that article.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was the writer's choice. Maybe that
she's a lesbian, you know, rock writer. So she doesn't have any allegiance to the church or making me or painting me in a, you know, a pro-religious light, you know, mm-hmm. but it was me making that point.
I know that there were a lot of people that were like, you know, thank you for giving such a great example in you know, pop culture, you know, to say, hey, you know what? I love my Mormonism. I love the fact that I served a mission. This is how I am, and I'm figuring it out,
yeah.
And it's okay.
Everyone
who's in the same place, it is absolutely okay to figure out, you know, how this all relates. And to be open about who you are. I think, you know, we've talked a lot about this in the Cultural Hall about how, you know, families, Mormon families will keep their kids in the closet for a really long time to the point that for some it ends their life early.
It's awful.
For some, it creates a life that they don't want to be a part of, either one of depression and those things, or a life where they'll end up trying to make everyone happy by being married, having kids, and going down that avenue, and then just, you know.
No one should ever live a life of resentment or fear, A. But B, like, you know, I know from experience that there are plenty of, you know, straight married men hiding it and leaving that really chaotic double life, and it's really saddening. And that was something I never wanted to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's not me being judgmental towards those people, but I just never could live that way. I was already kind of living that double life in a way, but, you know, I think it just naturally merged, and I was like, all right, this is just who I am.
Do you feel like a huge weight lifted off your shoulders? Oh,
absolutely. I mean, the weight really was lifted when I told the people that are in my life. And that's the people that were really important to me. I didn't have a lot of fear when the article came out. It was more curiosity. Just like, all right, who's going to care? And how are they going to react? And yes, I did have, you know, I didn't want it to affect the band. And that's why I really made it a point that it was done delicately. Because I didn't want our band to be labeled a gay band. We're not a gay band.
No.
You know, just as much as we're not a Mormon band, we're a band, but we also have these traits about us individually. But, you know, it's a tough tightrope, I guess. And I think so far it's been great, you know, and it's been really, because I'm an internal self-deprecator, so I'm always kind of apologizing in a way where, like, I don't, you know, I don't know if it's apologizing, but I'm kind of always expecting the worst. So it was a real nice surprise, the amount of love that I felt last week. It was crazy, you know, and the amount of news sources that picked it up and that people that cared, and which is cool. It's all I wanted, was to kind of get my thoughts out there, you know. I get tired of hearing, like, why is coming out news? I'm tired of hearing people come out, and it's like, you know, well, I'm tired of being called derogatory terms when I'm walking down the street, you know, to go get a bottle of water or something. You know, right. I'm tired of hearing LGBT youth suffering. I'm tired of,
would you get those slurs in your life? Did you get, like,
oh, I still do.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. At shows.
Don't you want to show everyone a calendar and be like, look, 2014.
Sure, but
this is the year that we're living in.
Plenty of people are backwards still, you know, and that's their choice. But, It's strange. It's going to sound weird, but I kind of sometimes hold those slurs as a badge of honor. I know that sounds a little twisted, but they're not appropriate at all, but it's kind of like, you know, that I am who I am, and this is, you know, I'm making people think, I'm making people react, and that too is something that I never want to be, this sedentary guy that blends, even before, you know, I was in a band. So, you know, it is a reminder that there's still a lot of work to do and a lot of things to stand for, I guess, you know, example to be.
Do you see yourself being sort of a, I don't know if I want to put it this way, but seeing yourself as kind of a spokesman for Mormon youth?
Oh, no. I mean, I don't.
Or do you want to, do you have any intention of reaching out to that? Because I think for a lot of people,
yes.
They're like, oh man, I can take great courage and confidence in the fact that this guy, and this could, you know, essentially, like you said, it could affected the band and, you know, ruined life, but you were courageous. They take a lot in that.
I'm absolutely open to speak to people, or, you know, in a grander setting or whatever, but No, I would never, like, chase being a spokesman or a role model, you know, because I'm full of flaws, and I, you know, I'm still figuring it all out. But I do know, at the very least, I want to be honest and honest with the people that come to our shows, honest people that listen to our music. And so, yeah, if I can help in that way, and if my honesty helps people, that's rad.
You hear that, North Star? That's a group that'll get in touch with you, I'm sure, if they haven't already.
Yeah, no, I've heard from some groups. I don't know all the names, but no, I'm totally down, you know.
I want to talk about the music, then I want to get you out of here.
Cool.
Pop Psychology, great. Comes out in the last
April
part
22nd,
of April.
Yeah.
We've heard a couple tracks from the album, and they're awesome.
Thanks.
Anything that we should be looking forward to that you're like, oh, this nugget's on there?
We just put a song out yesterday called Voices in the Halls, and it's sort of the, like, most simple and stripped Neon Trees song, because our songs have always been very grandiose and full, and I think this one shows a real nice side of the band that you maybe don't know unless you're really in touch with, like, the shows or us as individuals. And so it's cool. It really showcases the fact that I can really sing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't always believe that I can actually sing, and that I don't know if I wanted to prove that, but it was a nice,
it's a chance to showcase it, whether or not you're proving it.
Yeah. And the song to me is, I don't know, it's just really pretty. So I love that song. I love the record as a whole. It's, it's cool. I read a review, which I don't always do, but before, it was written before they knew sort of the context about the record, really. And they said it's a really fun, energetic party record. And to me, it's like, all right, that's one lens you or filter you can listen to it through, mm-hmm. which is great because I want us to be an energetic, fun escape band for people. But at the same time, there is a depth to it, which is cool. And I think it serves multiple purposes. But at the end, it's fun music, you know.
You guys are going on tour, touring the United States and Europe.
Yeah, Europe and the UK and the United States. It's crazy.
And I've heard... I tried
and Canada. Let's not forget that.
We can forget about Canada. I talked to Elaine, and she wouldn't tell me more than that you guys just have all sorts of colors. The neon part of Neon Trees is going to invade the stage. Can you give me any more than that?
Yeah, I mean, we've done some headlining tour before, but this is like a really big conscious headlining run, and it's in the biggest rooms we've played, and so it's as a band, like on our own, so it's the biggest rooms on our own, and we've really like made a cohesive image on this record, and I think it really translates live. I'm being vague still.
Yeah, right. are we talking like neon beach like, balls? What are we? Well, it's an ethereal effect,
yes,
which we feel down
lots
in the
air and space. No, I'm not going to tell you.
All right.
Just come and see it.
Oh, I'm going to. I just wanted to see if I could get anything from you.
Because I don't want to build up. I hate when.
Because yeah, then
you're
going to
call
up.
And you're going to be like, oh.
Oh, so that's what he was talking about.
Yeah. This is the greatest record that's been released in the last 20 years. It's going to change the history of music.
Are you ready?
No.
Couple other questions I want to ask you. You are an eccentric dresser, and I'm not kidding when I say I wish that I could dress like you. I just can't pull it off with my body type.
Okay, so it's the body type.
Yeah, no.
Sometimes there's people that say that, and I was like, well, yeah, I mean, you can if you want.
No, I've got bright blue suits. I've got pictures of me passing the sacrament as a young kid. Zoot suit, but I just don't.
Uncomfortable.
I just don't feel like I pull off the look of it.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
It's a choice.
In order to wear skinny jeans, you have to be skinny. If it's fat guy in skinny jeans, you go, that guy shouldn't really be wearing the pants. So I take it up. Was there any sort of issue on the mission where you have to be?
I brought the style on the mission as much as I could. I mean, you can express yourself obviously through ties, mm-hmm. and that's about it.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're in the small towns and you're not always get checked on, you can have a little bit of the cooler suit, okay. you know, that you pick up at the thrift store.
Yeah.
I definitely bought a lot of thrift store suits. So I definitely like came out with the two standard mm-hmm. Mr. Max suits, and then like those disappeared. And,
yeah, what happened to those?
Yeah, and I had the cool bike, and it was cool.
With a little playing card in the spoke, so it sounds like a motorcycle.
I was like, hey, I'm out here. I'm following the rules. Can I at least, you know.
You're like, I don't have a driver's license, yeah. so I'm just going to rock the motor ped. Here we go.
There you go.
So I wanted to ask you that. I wanted to ask you, I pushed it with Elaine, so I'm going to push it with you.
What up?
I want a Neon Trees rendition of a primary song, right? Now she talked about it and she's but I don't want to make it all punk. Like you hear like some of these things. I want, you know, you take a song or maybe even a church hymn.
Pretty.
And you just Neon Trees it in a way that maybe it doesn't even sound like the original one, but I want that so bad.
I just posted on my Facebook me singing in my living room, Where Can I Turn for Peace, on the acoustic guitar.
Oh, really?
So you could, that's like kind of a taste of what you want.
Yeah?
But it's not totally synthed out like a Neon Trees song. We should do that.
Yeah.
I've always, in the back of my mind, wanted to do some. I love hymns. Mm-hmm. I think they're so rad and deep, and the melodies are brilliant. So it'd be fun.
If I ever
should I do a gospel record,
yeah. If I ever win, the lottery and get all that filthy lucre, I plan on planning a concert that I'm going to call Choose the Rock, and I'm going to get
that's kind of rad.
I'm going to get you guys. I'm going to get your Panic at the Disco and your Imagine Dragons and your Killers and get anyone, you know, you get
I'm into it.
Everybody and just have it be a huge festival where there has to be some association with Mormonism.
I like
Choose
it.
The Rock. Huh?
Will you serve, like, food? Like, will you...
We'll have
Bisquick, egg casseroles.
Yeah, of course. And your funeral potatoes.
Shasta.
Yeah. Shasta shooters going
Shasta
through the
shooters.
Audience, all
yeah.
that stuff. No, it will be fully embraced Mormonism. In
I love it.
Yeah.
I back it.
Okay. All right. So you hear
we'll
that.
We'll cover Mormon rap.
Yeah.
The tape.
There you go.
Which, by the way, no one in the band but me and Chris, because we're from California, knew that song.
Yeah. The Mormon rap.
Mormon rap. I loved it. And they didn't know, and I thought maybe it was just a California thing, but apparently...
Originally you know, originated here in Utah.
That's
I
what I thought.
Yeah. And then kind of last question that we like to ask everyone who comes in here into the Cultural Hall.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite part of your faith?
Do people think that we're actually in the Cultural Hall right now?
Some do.
They do, huh?
Yeah. We've actually recorded a few episodes.
There'd be a weird echo, though.
Right? And there would be one kid running around going, "Ma!"
Yeah.
Ugh.
Right.
Favorite
Have you
part
ever
of your,
thought that oh. kids should be, like, sort of quarantined at church?
You know, here's the deal.
Is this going to be controversial?
No, no, no. Listen to this. Let's speculate here for a minute. Joseph Smith, back in the time of Kirtland, there is a document where you can see where kids under 8 weren't allowed in.
Yeah, and I don't know if we need to go that far, but, like...
No, we need to go that far. If you're not accountable...
But doesn't it suck when you, like, get up and, like, you're stoked and you want to go to church, and then you can't even hear anything
mm-hmm.
the entire time.
Yeah. I think he had...
You probably have children?
I have one, yeah.
So it's probably... I mean, you as a father having to, like... I don't know.
Well, my kid chooses not to come.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's at home.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you
have it. But my ward is full of...
Children.
Just
Especially
loud.
Especially those young family wards.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there is the average age of people in my ward is probably 7 because there are so many newborns.
Yeah. I mean, bless them. They're beautiful, but.
But there should be a room, rubber lined, locked from the outside, and the kids can just, you know, get everybody
beat each other.
Get every sick, beat each other up. You know, there's one adult there that's their calling just to make sure that, you know, blood doesn't ensue.
Yeah.
Soundproof. Sacrament meeting gets over, or even just the first 20 minutes. Let's lock them up for 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm down.
I don't think we're... I'm not.
Well, they made that rule, like, you can't be under 8 and bear your testimony on Sunday.
Yeah, they tried to encourage
that.
That
was a little while ago.
Yeah.
So maybe we're on the way. As we're always a little behind, we're on the way.
Everybody thought the most controversial part of this episode would be the coming out part. Actually, it's
no,
the lock up
it's
your
my
kids.
Anti-children law mandate.
Interesting question that goes with that. And then I do want to get to your favorite part
sorry,
of your
but
faith.
I keep, sorry.
Do you want to have kids?
Yeah. I've never thought about it. I always thought it was kind of, you know, in my early 20s, I was like, okay, I'll get married to a woman. Hopefully I can meet one that sways me. Obviously, that's pretty impossible. I mean, it's not totally impossible. I guess, there's so many facets to these conversations, but I guess there are gay men that like do marry women and in the church.
And love them. And
love
are,
them. And
yeah.
That's awesome. I guess for me, it was just, it always seemed impossible. Yeah, I want kids. I think I'd make a rad dad.
Yeah.
I think it's already really hard to adopt kids as a straight couple. So as a single gay man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how easy it's going to be. Hopefully, you know, I might meet someone and then maybe we can. I don't know.
What you do is you just talk to Elaine and be like, listen, you legally do this and then I'll take care
of
it.
I kind of like, I wish it was that easy where you could just like take children from your friends as gifts. Because I'd be down.
Favorite part of your faith?
Favorite part of my faith? I think the fact that through everything, through all... through all the like the doubt and the like really, really, really aggressively hard times, I've always turned I wanna like get emotional, but I always turn to I just organically turn to Christ. I really do, and I've always turned to prayer. And it's even when those times are I'm not even like actively going or don't really feel like I have a ward. Or a bishop to talk to, you know, and there are those moments, long years of that. And I still feel like I have this, this real, fire, you know, and I think that's what's kept me. I think it'd be very, very easy for me to say I'm gay and I'm out, mm-hmm. see ya. and it's not something I just feel right about, you know? And it's, so that's, I think my favorite part of my faith is that it's honestly, it's honest and real and I don't want to say earned, but really, I've really sought after it. It's something that I really, questioned and got, I think through it all, like I will always, I'll never be able to deny it. You know, there's things I don't agree with. I think there's always those things for people that you have mm-hmm. to question in the church, but I'll never be able to deny it. It's odd sometimes when I sit back, but it's also like really, really cool.
Well, I appreciate you being here. We hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week.
Yes.
And that you'll be able to travel home in safety when the time comes. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show. Ow!